A college student entered a cave with some of his friends in 1959. They were back to explore an unmapped area they found, but everything that happened after the group entered the cave went increasingly wrong. In fact, it went so wrong that following the incident, there was mostly criticism of the events that happened surrounding that day. I'm Tatiana, and this is Occurrence. On Sunday, March 22, 1959, a group of 8 cavers planned a trip to Peak Cavern. Peak Cavern is a popular and well-known cave system in Castleton, Derbyshire, in England. One of the cavers in the group was 20-year-old Oscar Hackett Neil Moss. He went by Neil Moss, so that's what I'll call him. Neil was an undergraduate student at Oxford University, and he studied philosophy at Balliol College on campus. He loved to explore, especially underground. Actually, most people in the group were a part of the British Speleological Association, and they met up the night before to celebrate the organization at a banquet dinner. Neil was a guest to his friend who was also in Oxford's caving club. 4 of the people present wanted to explore a passage that they discovered 2 weeks prior, and Neil, who was into sports and caving, just had to tag along. So Neil and the others made a plan to go see it that morning. Once they entered Peak Cavern and were underground, they were just generally having a great time. Shoving and elbowing as they squeeze through the passages, and it's muddy, but they don't mind, they love it. They reach about 1,000 feet, or 305 meters, below ground when they come up on a large chamber. They were in the stalagmite chamber in Peak Cavern. It's huge and open and has a lot of space. There's some water inside, of course, but inside of it was a narrow shaft that went almost straight down. It was an unexplored tunnel in the stalagmite chamber, and no one had been down the shaft before. They debate for a minute on who would be the first to go down it before it's decided that it would be Neil. Honestly, I'm not sure how they decided it would be him first. I believe only 4 of the people in the group were there at that time. The others were elsewhere. Neil was on the slender side, but the guy was 6'3", so I can't imagine in what world sending a tall person down first was the best choice. Actually, looking at how small the shaft is, and if you're on YouTube, you can see it, but for those of you who can't, I'm a petite person. 5'1", if I want to round up on a good day, 100 pounds soaking wet, and you would not even catch me going into that shaft. I know people who love caving and spelunking tend to work a little bit differently, but I genuinely can't imagine what made them think it was a good idea. But I guess if you're used to squeezing into tight passages, it probably wasn't a huge deal to them. I don't know. I digress. So Neil starts inching his way down the narrow shaft at 3:30 p.m., and it's quiet. The other cavers are nervous. Some probably can't believe he really was brave enough to go down the shaft. They actually estimated the shaft was about 40 feet, so they put a 75-foot ladder down the tunnel in case it continued beyond that. They could tell it was also corkscrewed and was a difficult squeeze, but it was so silent they would hear every movement Neil made. The anticipation was building. The shaft hung a little off vertical for 12 feet before he would reach the corkscrew. After that, it was a 10-foot-long incline bedding plane, followed by another 18-foot vertical drop. They were waiting for him to say he made it and is going into another opening, or that he's changed his mind and is coming back up. But instead they hear the sounds of rocks moving around. Neil was trying to move boulders blocking the shaft to one side. So he moved himself into a small recess, but in the process he jammed the ladder beneath him. After a while of struggling to move things around, he was over it and decided to just climb back out. Unfortunately, when he did, he realized he couldn't lift his feet enough to climb back up the ladder and became sandwiched in a little recess that was only 18 inches wide. Neil decided to grab onto the ladder with his hands and yelled for the guys above to pull the ladder while he held onto it. It actually worked at first because they lifted him a few feet, but then the ladder jammed. Then they hear from 40 feet below, "I'm stuck, I can't budge an inch." At first there was a little concern, I mean, he was stuck, but he was feet first, and it just looked like a simple rope would be able to get him out. His companions figured the rescue would be done quickly. Unfortunately, that wouldn't be the case. At first, they did try to lower the ropes to Neil and pull him out that way, but the rope wasn't strong enough. They tried several times to pull him out with rope, and each time it broke. Sometimes it was just from not being able to withstand the weight, and other times it was because it sheared from rubbing against the rocks. After a few hours of being trapped in the narrow chamber, the air started turning toxic. So Neil was over 1,000 feet underground. There wasn't a strong open airflow because of the turn down into the shaft he's in, and because his body was blocking the little airflow he was getting. He was breathing his own recirculated air in this tight area he's in, breathing out carbon dioxide, and after a while, he's not breathing in much else. His breathing caused a huge buildup of carbon dioxide, so thick that the air smelled foul. It was literally toxic, and it made Neil act out. He was disoriented and acting irrational. And as time went on, he became less and less cooperative, to the point where he wasn't at all worried about how serious his situation was. At one point, he actually told the others to go out and grab a bite to eat. So clearly, he wasn't doing very well, and the situation took a turn for the worse, so radio news bulletins went out asking for help. Within a couple of hours, volunteers from anywhere and everywhere in England descended into Peak Cavern. The Royal Air Force, the National Coal Board, the Royal Navy, dozens of private caving groups, and individual cavers, along with people wanting to help the rescuers, all flooded the area to help. There were around 200 people in total. The new plan was to get a stronger rope around Neil and try to pull him out that way. They just needed people small enough to actually reach him. So the first volunteer went to lower themselves down to Neil, and on their way down, they passed out. The second volunteer gave it a try, and on their way down, they passed out. The third volunteer got ready to go down to Neil, and you'd hope that the third time's the charm. Of course they'll be able to even make it to Neil. Nope, the third volunteer passed out too. None of them even made it to Neil before the toxic air had them unconscious. But the fourth time was kind of the charm. Ron Peters was the fourth volunteer to try and get to Neil, and he managed to make it down. He actually got the rope around Neil's chest and everything, but it increased Neil's breathing difficulty. They still weren't able to get him out, so when a delivery of oxygen bottles showed up at 12:30 a.m., a Royal Air Force doctor pumped oxygen through a tube and into the shaft while standing waist-deep in mud. Everyone sent out more pleas for help for an experienced caver small enough to be able to work in the narrow shaft. While they were waiting, they still kept trying with the volunteers they had there, but every time the rescuers were forced back. The air was still too toxic, and while they weren't passing out anymore, when they made it back out of the shaft, they were visibly confused and distressed. Early the next morning, so day two of Neil being trapped, June Bailey showed up at the cave entrance. She was 18 years old and described as a Manchester typist. She was eager and ready to help, wanting to do whatever she could to get Neil out. Allegedly, she was told, if Neil's shoulders were too jammed against the shaft walls, that she needed to break his collarbones in order to free his shoulders. I couldn't corroborate that particular detail, but it was reported multiple times. June probably wasn't a huge fan of that plan, but agreed to go into the cave regardless. She made it 40 feet into the shaft, right on top of Neil, but the air was so foul and toxic she wasn't able to stay and was forced to turn back. By that afternoon, 24 hours after Neil went down the shaft, his breathing could still be heard. It was labored, but they still had hope and wanted to try again. They had the compressed air cylinders blowing as much air as they could down the tube, trying to blow out the foul air. Everything was covered in mud, the ladder, the rope, and obviously the walls. They could only see an indistinct blockage covered in mud below and had to assume it was Neil since they couldn't make out any of his features with all the mud. The last rescuers to get close to him said he was firmly jammed in an unmovable position, with one arm shoved into a recess under a ladder rung in the effort to pull him out. While they were trying to flood the area with the compressed air, they had other rescuers trying to excavate the rock lower down. The goal was to break through into a lower tunnel, but it didn't work. It had been raining frequently throughout the rescue, and it was looking like the area of Peak Cavern, named Mucky Ducks, was going to flood, so rescuers were told to leave the cave. When the rain stopped, they went back in, and they realized they couldn't hear Neil's breathing anymore. So the Royal Air Force doctor announced Neil Moss was dead and went on to later say it was his first and only time declaring death without seeing the patient. His exact time of death was unknown, but officially it was reported at 3 a.m. on Tuesday, March 24th, 1959. They were listening for his breathing at the shaft entrance like they had been all along, but I kind of wonder if maybe he could have still been breathing at that point and it was just shallow and quiet. I'm not a medical professional, but I am curious if that would have been possible considering it was loud and labored before. Like maybe they just couldn't hear it from where they were at and he was still alive. But if you are a medical professional and listening to this on Spotify or YouTube, leave a comment and let me know. Neil's father, Eric Moss, had been waiting outside of the tunnel entrance since the rescue started. He was a British cotton executive and pretty well off, but it was his request that they leave Neil in the place where he died because he didn't want anyone else to risk their lives. The lower part of the shaft was sealed with some rocks, and an inscription was later made beside it. They actually spelled his name wrong on the inscription. His name is spelled N-E-I-L, and they spelled it N-I-E-L, which is sad. The stalagmite chamber was renamed Moss Chamber, and there was a rumor that cement was poured to seal off the area, but that never actually happened. The top of the shaft is open. There's just rocks partway down, covering Neil, I guess. The entire tragedy was international news, and following the tragedy, people called for caving to be banned altogether. Some of the people involved in the rescue attempt received medals that year, but there were definitely strong opinions coming from both sides. Apparently, Bob Leakey, who I talked about in the Mossdale Caverns episode, titled The Most Deadly Cave Disaster in Britain, he was a caving legend and did a lot. But allegedly, he was there to help with the rescue and was just appalled with how disorganized and ineffective it was. Quite a few people had similar feelings. Neil Moss's death and probably the controversy that followed led to the Derbyshire Cave Rescue Organization completely reorganizing. If you like stories like this, don't forget to follow or subscribe wherever you're listening from. Stay safe and see you next Thursday.